a little tidbit of information before I get started here. Oh my goodness. I don't have all my, wait a second, are they here? There, no, that's not it. Yeah, I don't have all my pages. This is what we call collaborative ministry. It's like, wait, they're not in order. And I'm blushing, so. Anyway, thank you, dear Kyle. Yeah, how did that happen? Okay, anyway. So just a little tidbit of information. You heard the name Lydia, who prevailed upon Paul and Silas, and actually Timothy was there too, to come to her house. Her house church is the Church of Philippi. So the epistle to the Philippians, which comes later on in the New Testament, mentions her as well, and that is a church that Lydia founded, a woman in the first century. So all those centuries we spent not ordaining women should have listened to Paul, actually. So anyway, back to the story at hand. Lydia is an important character in this story. And of course, so are Paul and Silas. And I have to be very honest with you here and say that I think it's Paul and Silas that I'm supposed to be wanting to focus on today. This is a famous story of Paul and Silas in jail and freed from prison. It is a story that provided sustenance to civil rights workers who were unjustly imprisoned and beaten throughout the 40s and 50s and 60s. And I'm pretty sure that this story of Paul and Silas in jail is meant to be the climax of our little section here of chapter 16. All this praying and singing, an earthquake, chains breaking, an actual conversion, and a whole family baptized together. It's really dramatic. It takes up the bulk of the verses that we heard. It's exciting and important to the plot line of the whole narrative of the book of Acts. But, as I said, to be very frank with you, Paul and Silas didn't do it for me this week. I can't get past the slave girl, as she's called. I can't get past the slave girl. I know that she is just a hinge in this greater story. She's just a mere plot point in the greater narrative. If she had not been following Paul and Silas, annoying Paul to the point that he finally freed her of that spirit that held her in her grip, if her owners then would never have been angered enough to bring Paul and Silas before the judge who had them beaten and imprisoned, a prison from which they were miraculously saved. And because of this miracle saving, the jailer and the family were converted, and that whole first century church grew, all because of this little linchpin in the story. None of this would have happened if it hadn't been for the slave girl, and I know that's probably what the preaching scholars would love to have me focus on today. But we are left hanging here. We are left wondering about this girl and what happened to her, this important person in the story. Now that she no longer has this spirit of divination, what do you suppose her owners did with their prized possession? They didn't seem to care too much about her well-being or even her mere personhood. Did you notice that when they dragged Paul and Silas before the authorities, they didn't say, "These men robbed us of our primary means of income by curing our slave." didn't say that. They just said, these men are disturbing the peace. So she's not only pushed from our minds in this narrative, she's also pushed out of their minds. And apparently Paul's as well. Because as far as we know, he never goes back to tend to her. Doesn't mention her again. People who inhabit the margins of stories like this, that shape our lives, that shape our faith, are very easy to overlook. They're easy to see for a moment in the periphery, out of the corner of our eye. But when they slip from view, they slip from our minds. So let's spend a few moments this morning with this girl on the margins of this story. I want to invite you to use your imaginations a bit with the scripture. We're often so quick to just take it in and take it at face value. I want to go into this crack in the story. Step in there with our imaginations. Close your eyes if you'd like, if that's easier for you to imagine, or you're welcome to keep them open. But think about this girl on the margins of the story, possessed not only by humans, but possessed also by a spirit. In your mind's eye, how old did you picture this girl?
Young.
Young. Well, young to me, is she, let's say, like elementary school aged, 8 to 10?
No.
Adolescent, maybe, 12, 13? Teen to 20s?
Yeah.
Teen to 20s. For some people, that's old. But yeah, okay. So that's how we picture her, right? To be honest, I picture more like a little girl, like a 10-year-old. I picture about a 10-year-old. Do you suppose she's been a slave all her life? Maybe she was sold into slavery because her parents couldn't afford another mouth to feed, especially a daughter. That happened then. It happens today. Children are sold into slavery because households can't afford another mouth to feed. Could she possibly have been kidnapped into slavery because of that strange spirit? We know this happens today as well. Do you think her gift for discerning the truth, this spirit of divination, that was a gift for discerning the truth, do you suppose this was the only way her owners used her? Could it possibly have been worse? Now consider what happens to her after Paul frees her of the spirit. Was she left standing? Did maybe the force of her words and the withdrawal of the spirit knock her down on the road? Knock her out? Did her owners maybe just throw her to the streets, since she was no longer of any use to them. What must it have felt like to her to be suddenly free? Imagine that, especially for those of us who thought that perhaps, imagined that perhaps she had been enslaved her whole life. And if she was late teens, 20, 19, imagine what it must have felt like to be suddenly free. No longer possessed by a spirit, no longer possessed by these profiteers. Where does she turn now? Where does she go? Could she go home? Maybe she doesn't even know where home is. And if she did know where home was and went home, would they even welcome her home? I don't believe this enslaved girl's story is ended just because she fulfilled her role in the grander narrative of Acts and its story of the first century church. And I don't believe her story ended just because she was suddenly freed from the spirit and the humans that possessed her and used her. Freedom often presents a whole new set of trials and dilemmas that lead many folks to prefer slavery and freedom. I know many people marvel at why women who are experiencing intimate partner violence don't just get up and leave. They experience the same thing this slave girl does. The Hebrew children, wandering through the desert, believed that their life would have been much better had they just stayed enslaved in Egypt, because then at least they would have had food and water. Sudden freedom is terrifying. So what about this girl in our story? Her story gets lost. So we're going to add to it. Lest it get lost. She is so important. She is not trivial. No child of God is trivial. Lest her story get lost, we must write an ending. Here's how I would do it. On the way to the place of prayer, Paul forcefully cast out from this girl that spirit that was tormenting her, the spirit that used her so that her owners could use her. As the crowd pushed past her and rushed off to the magistrates, following the masters of this girl who were dragging Paul and Silas, they just pushed right past her and left her standing there on the road alone, in shock. She looked around, wondering where to go, what to do next. And Lydia. Lydia, a seller of purple cloth, who became a believer herself just a few weeks earlier, who founded a church in her home just a few weeks earlier. Lydia was there at the place of prayer with others. She saw what happened. She saw the girl standing there alone and dazed. And she came to the girl and she asked her her name. I'll name her Alexandra. Lydia came to Alexandra and brought her to the place of prayer, wrapped a cloak around her to keep her warm, and offered her some bread. When the day was over, they brought Alexandra to Lydia's house, where this new and growing band of worshipers was meeting, and they welcomed her. There are many people standing on the margins of grander plot lines of success and happiness and family and fulfillment. Too often, these folks are used as political pawns in contests for control and power, or as human shields in culture wars. Some of these folks may be seeking freedom. Others of them may be newly freed. I guarantee you, we walk past some of these folks when we walk down the street. And I guarantee you, some of us are sitting in this sanctuary. We, the church, are called to see and inquire about these children of God standing on the margins. We, the church, are called to be that community that accompanies, befriends, and guides those who have been enslaved by poverty, by violence, by addiction, by grief, by mental illness, by fear, by loneliness. We, the church, are called to listen to their stories. Listen to their stories and let their stories be told. This, my friends, is how we shake the foundations. This is how we are breakers of chains.